Next, I'd like to introduce Andrea Seltz-Treed. Andrea taught for a number of years over at Duke as a creative writing instructor. I've only recently been able to read her work, and what I found is that there are moments of it can be tough and surprising and tender all at the same time. I think you'll find moments of surprise in her work. And so I'm very excited to welcome Andrea Seltz. Thank you. Oh, and just also, she's on the board of directors at Carolina Wren, and Carolina Wren is set up over there, and they're one of the sponsors of this event, so they've helped make this festival possible, so we should thank them.
Is this one on? Okay. The first poem I'm going to read is the title poem from my book, Succory. Succory is an alternate name for chicory, which hundreds of years ago, the leaves of succory were used for love potions. So this is a poem about a relationship and a plant. Succory. Slow the green came, weaning the white bud from its tight swaddle of leaves. Below, the slim stalk hardened. Each evening, stark against the muggy pane, its veins drew closer in and spined like bark, and you moved about the room oblivious. Never in this whole slow flowering did the blossoms flaunt their vellum blue, but spread their moth wings uncertainly as the first clean sheets we laid together on my bed, tentative as we lay that following morning, the first you didn't have to leave. And now the flowers blow, their whiteness quelled, and you and I unsheaf. You disavow our home the way a bough lets go a blighted bud. So how is it you held nothing and I hold on, left at the sill with only this slow unfolding? I tend to write poems in groups. And the next group I'm going to read is called Night of the Rhinoceros. And these are poems inspired by a painter's work. His name is Kelly Fearing. He lives in Texas. He's 86. He's kind of a surrealist mystic, follower of Eastern religions, and even today is still practicing yoga. I'm as inspired by his paintings as by... I'm as inspired by the titles of his paintings as much by the paintings themselves. So I've given these poems the same titles and medium that he uses. The first, I'll just go and read all five in a row with their titles. The Zebra's Secret is Silver, 1974, Oil on Canvas. It's important to begin at the beginning, not aardvark or antelope, but aquamarine, and not to trouble yourself at first about composition. Just listen to shadow and mist, the fan of whiskers from a muzzle not quite black. Everyone and everything has already come, already gone, so there's no hurry. Without hoofprints behind him or before him, the zebra stands on the small green hill, flicking his tail, an equine no. Large Bird Listening to the Sounds of Purple, 1976 to 1985, Prismacolor Pencil. 9 years he stood, neck curved, wings not quite folded down, until what he heard announced its hue, not violet, lilac, amethyst, but colored pencil purple. To the eye, it's nearly red. So close your eyes. Man Doing Isolation Horseback, 1948, Conti crayon on white cameo paper. Come, say the muscles as the man reaches up. Come, uncover youth. Beneath him, the mare grazes onward, onward into tantric old age. The cameo paper is filled with the noise of a thousand birds. The Poet and the Bird Before an Open Cave, 1963, Oil on Canvas. Even though it's a fantasy, they don't speak the same language. The man hears squawk, squawk, and the bird wonders what interest there is in a bush, albeit a fragrant one like rosemary. But through the cave, another sky is visible. Night of the Rhinoceros, 1968, Oil on Canvas. Why should he wait for morning? He is light on his three toes, beguiling, striped with wrinkles, 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 and pointed at hawk hip horns. Above him, in cobalt becoming marine, the four swallows follow. Wherever he's going will be home. Thanks. Three poems from a series called The Euphonics. It's like phonics, ebonics. Euphonics, the emphasis is on joy or music. And each of these poems uses one or two letters from the alphabet as the main sound. It gets a little obsessive, and it's like a short-lived relationship. So the first one is called U, and the dominant letter is U. Because I spent all night dancing with you, I said last night's prayers this afternoon, and then this evening when you were, who knows, at your home, and I was here alone thinking, could this love be true? I found myself with folded hands praying anew. What should I do? What should I do? After the 1-2-1-2 of all night dancing with you, what else could I do? Oh, you, honey, do come back soon. Who cares if it's true? But while it's new, I'd rather my two hands were full of you. Well, that was the upside of the relationship. It quickly goes down. This one is in the voice of my dog, Queen Bee, and the issue was that the person I was dating was both a vegetarian and allergic to dogs. And this was really puzzling to Queen Bee, because she thought, vegetarianism meant loving animals. She had this to say. It's called The Ballad of the Bee, or Queen Bee's Lament, and the dominant letters are Q and B. Listen, my liege, my owner, my alpha king, you have known me most to quail and quaver. I submit I'm not the pit bull you bargained for, but quite the opposite. Only in dreams do I quiver bravely, queering a bunny, bagging a quail. Now, however, I have a big quarrel. The bone is this, that biped you've been biting faces and rubbing bellies with, boy, is she quirky. So queasy and querulous, and worst of all, what's her beef with the beasts? She won't eat anything that once breathed, yet she won't properly greet me. Instead of standing still so I might sniff her butt or lick her limbs, I must sit quietly while she slings a soy snack in my general direction. I should have known. The first night you vacuumed, then banished me to the back room, left my bowl filled with backwash as if I'd been bad. I didn't quibble, though, thinking, at least it's not a bath. But there, I barked too soon. Now for our quality time, the questing of the ball. You have substituted a weekly bath and brushing. Kel horror. Now, instead of calling Queen Bee, you disparage my dander, admonish, be clean. What if once I were to bite quickly, quite by accident, of course, her hand, as yet another beef-free biscuit, was bequeathed to me? Ah, the bloodbath, the bruising. But quit this belly aching, I tell myself. It doesn't befit a bitch. Behave, be loyal to the last. And so I bay. Once upon a time, you called me Queenie and bantered and baby-talked to me, and we walked quotidianly, and on holidays I quaffed beef broth from a quality bowl. Now I am the bee, second banana, on the back burner, baroness, but still unbudging, quiescent in my basket next to your queen-size bed. So when your dog writes you that poem, this is the end. So this is the end of the series. It's called Good Times and Bad, and the letters are B and G. Are all relationships grab bags or just the badly grounded ones? My guess, merely the latter, where the bitterness of long ago battery guts any bravery and makes one guarded as hell. But you and I, despite our ghastly backgrounds, when we bonded, galloped. You were gallant, gorgeous, I was brave, blunt. God, but it was good, that groping our way to bliss, and even after it, the blushing and giggling, gone all the butch bravado, I was gaga for you, baby. And then, by gum, something else began, a basic grasping. Your baby blues went goo-goo, and I both boo-hooed and grew grandiose. In bed, you took my biting for belligerence, and I your groans for granted. Now you battle germs and other bugbears, which bothers me, and when I grumble, you grovel. And then I get even more greedy with my time. Does it boil down to who's more guilty, or that I am bi and grungy and gregarious, while you are gay, bookish, and homebound? I won't begrudge us some discord, but geez, we've got to be bananas for each other. We're big girls. Let's break up. Two more? Okay. This poem is about my daughter, Helen. Last year, I had to wean her early because I had to attend an academic conference, which just points up the academic separation of body and mind. It's called Early Weaning. April should be a painting by a girl who's just discovered green and green and green. Yet when the new leaves suddenly unfurl tiny baby hands, the wrens seem still as sticks and the mockingbirds don't sing their morning songs. In the kitchen while I cut out biscuits, my infant daughter crawls commando style. Her goal's a chair leg or some Tupperware, and once I find her eating afternoon, my watch, so long unused, it's still on last year's daylight savings time. Hunger draws us to each other. I feed on feeding her, and once again, the milk flowing and the birds outside, unsilent. I think of how I should, but won't, begin to scrape my own encrusted palate clean. My book, Startling, is coming out in October. Contains many poems about my having babies at the same time my father was dying of cancer. In spite of that work, I really didn't consider my own mortality until last fall when I had a little tiny stroke while I was reading to my son. So this poem is about that experience, and the title of the poem is the title of the book I was reading to him. It's called Duck on a Bike. The night of my first stroke, Duck was riding a bike, no hands past chicken. When my right arm went numb and inside myself, I fell into a well that stretched down below speech. What did Chicken say? I heard my son ask seconds later, but I was floating terrified in the lovely muted deep. A grimace was all I managed, somehow thinking, if I can loosen my jaw, the words will come. And then they did, and the boy was satisfied. Next week, I joined the line of old ladies driving Buick LeSabres from clinic to be pummeled by sound waves and radio waves on tables and in tiny tunnels where the only way to pass the time is count slowly to yourself. Once I counted to 622, which I'm sure I've never done before, and another time I made up 19 verses of Down in the Valley as if consoling my unsleeping infant daughter from 3:05 a.m. onward. But on the blue-gray screen, my heart just beat. It didn't turn or kick. I had my knees tapped and held my arms out sideways and brought them in and gave gallons of my blood for testing and told of how I'd lost the sense of left and right and took off all my jewelry and showed my tattoos to a crowd of nurses and gave up steak and ate a plate of salad with my lunch for weeks, and despite it all, my blood got fatter till, at barely 40, I'm on aspirin and Lipitor and cringe each night I have to read the duck book where Chicken, because aren't chickens always right, says, look out, duck, watch where you're going. Thanks.